So as part of a Henry Morton Stanley School of Christian Journalism series, we're wanting to look tonight on, is South Africa entering the second phase of the revolution? Psalm 55 verse 22, the words of his mouth were smoother than butter, but war was in his heart. His words were softer than oil, yet there were drawn swords. Does the announcement by ANC's new president Cyril Ramaphosa regarding the ANC's determination to expropriate or confiscate land from white South Africans without compensation and give them to our people, as he put it, does this signal a second phase of the revolution? The French Revolution plainly had two phases, and this is the gold standard, so to speak, for all revolutions. The first phase of the revolution was seizing political control. The second phase of the revolution, also called the Reign of Terror, sought the radical transformation of every aspect of French society. It was a cultural revolution, a religious revolution, a social and an economic revolution. That's the second phase of the revolution. The second phase of the revolution in France involved seizing control over every area of life, including the churches, the schools, and the farms. 40,000 people were beheaded on the guillotine in the Reign of Terror. Another 300,000 were executed by firing squads, or drownings, or other means. France was plunged into 25 years of constant warfare, which devastated much of Europe. The Bolshevik Revolution of 1917 seized political control of the country from the Duma, or the Parliament of Russia. Now, this is worth noting because the media continually tells you, even school textbooks, that the Bolshevik Revolution seized control of from the Tsar, and that basically the taking over of Russia from the Tsar was essential to bring democracy to the country. But that's not true. The Parliament of Russia persuaded the Tsar to abdicate, and it was the Bolsheviks who overthrew the Parliament or the Duma. But that doesn't make as nice a story. Just like when it comes to the Zimbabwe Revolution, they will tell you that Robert Mugabe seized control from Ian Smith. That's not true. Ian Smith opened up one-man, one-vote elections in which Bishop Abel Muzorewa became prime minister. And then the British talked Abel Muzorewa into handing over to a British governor so they could have another set of elections which would have international recognition. And then the British betrayed everything that they'd just agreed to in Lancaster House Agreement and hand over to Robert Mugabe. But that doesn't make as good a story. You must never let the facts get in the way of a good narrative. We're approaching on the 17th of July, the day before Mandela Day, when we will remember the 100th anniversary of the butchering of the Romanov family, the Tsar and his family murdered by the Bolsheviks in Russia, in what became the Soviet Union, this coming 17th of July. Well, 12 years later, in December 1929, Soviet dictator Joseph Stalin announced the liquidation of the kulaks as a class. Now, we have the opportunity to carry out a resolute offensive against the kulaks, break the resistance, and eliminate them. The kulaks were farmers. Dekulakization was presented as land reform. This is the original land reform. The official state newspaper, Pravda, which literally means truth, as people in Russia always told me, there's nothing true in Pravda. There's nothing new in Izvestia. Izvestia means news. The official state newspaper, Pravda, declared in order to eliminate the kulaks as a class, the resistance of this class must be smashed in open battle. It must be deprived of the productive source of its existence and development, the free use of land, instruments of production, land renting, and right to hire labor, etc. That is the term towards the policy of eliminating the kulaks as a class, quote unquote, Joseph Stalin, published in Pravda, 1929. Under this dekulakization policy, 18 million peasants lost their homes and their farms, millions being deported to Siberia, to the icy wastes of Central Asia. And it was actually reported in some newspapers at the time, the hunger, the despair, the death in Ukraine agony. Not that the world did much about it, but these would be some of the KGB, or then they were called the Cheka and the NKVD, identifiable by their leather jackets. They were searching the hidden grain stocks that people might have under their barn and so on. Up to 11 million Ukrainians died in the massacres and resultant man-made starvation between 1929 and 1936. Death by starvation. Absolute massacres. This came to be called the Holodomor, also known as the Great Famine and the Ukrainian Genocide 1932 to 1933, which is when it had its peak. The word Holodomor, literally translated from Hungarian, means death by hunger, to kill by hunger, or to starve to death. Holodomor is a compound of the Ukrainian words holod, meaning hunger, and mor, meaning plague. So it's a hunger plague, Holodomor, which most people don't even know about. But there are memorials in Ukraine to this. The 2017 film Bitter Harvest dramatizes the horrors of the Soviet Holodomor in Ukraine. Well worth seeing. Courageous, because not only does it not flinch from the truth, but it does it in a sensitive way, and it's got a strong spirit of resistance. It's not just a litany of horror. The Black Book of Communism, 900-page doorstopper to drop on your liberal friend's foot, and they'll be limping under the weight of the evidence. This provides further documentation of the systematic extermination of farmers in Ukraine, which was once called the breadbasket of Europe. You could feed everyone in Europe from Ukraine, yet they starved people to death by the millions there. This was followed by the Great Purge, or the Great Terror, in which over 950,000 Russians were killed by the Soviet secret police, the NKVD, which later became the KGB. This included many Communist Party members and government officials and many officers of the Red Army. In fact, the entire upper echelon of the Red Army, not just the entire upper echelon, the entire middle structure of the NKVD, of the Red Army, the NKVD wiped them out. Ultimately, even Leon Trotsky, born Levi Davidovich Bronstein, the Soviet hero of the revolution, head of the Red Army, was assassinated 20th of August 1940 with an ice axe. He literally got the axe. By the way, this is the inspiration for, in Animal Farm, Snowball leads the revolution, the animal revolution, and then Napoleon, who did absolutely nothing, gets him chased away and killed by his dogs, who obviously symbolize the secret police, the KGB. And, I mean, it's just the classic how Stalin, who had no significant role in the revolution, kills the hero of the revolution, makes himself the hero of the revolution, which he actually did nothing for. This is the kind of Soviet propaganda you'd see. Notice the hammer and the sickle and what they're smashing. They're smashing the mechanisms of even time, and that's the head of a peasant. Actually, it's probably a kulak, what we would call a farmer. And it's just a very interesting 1930s style, how they described their dekulakization. Ultimately, revolutionaries turn on one another, and this has been true in every revolution. Robespierre, the prototype revolutionary of the French Revolution, ended up beheaded on the very guillotine he had condemned so many others to. 40,000 got guillotined, and he is like one of the last of the victims. They put him on the same guillotine he'd guillotined all of his victims on. Robert Mugabe had Josiah Magama Tongagara, the commander of the Zanla guerrilla army, assassinated 26 December 1979. Now, Tongagara was a real guerrilla. You know, he killed people. And he was apparently a charismatic type of leader, very eloquent speaker. And obviously he was going to be the next, well, he's going to be the first president of a ZANU-controlled Zimbabwe. He was in the front line. Here you can see this picture of Mugabe looking totally out of place in a guerrilla camp in Mozambique with Tongagara, and you can quite plainly see body language here and everything else, and just the way how Mugabe stands, and he doesn't know how to wear a uniform or how to act around guns. But anyway, many had expected Tongagara to be the first president of Zimbabwe, with Robert Mugabe as head of the political wing as the prime minister. I mean, the real power was in the hands of Tongagara. So the strategic removal, assassination of Tongagara left the path to the presidency open to Mugabe. Okay, they were able to put out a $6,900 postage stamp for Tongagara. But as you will see in places like Zimbabwe, who killed Tongagara? 30 years of independence, 30 years of killing our people. Mugabe. Who killed Tongagara? Mugabe. Keeping Zimbabwe's tired, since 1980. This is put over a tire advert. Just the kind of way how people get their message out. Similarly, Eduardo Mondlane, the founding president of Mozambican Liberation Front, or FELIMO, was assassinated in 1969 by a parcel bomb in FELIMO headquarters in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, to make way for Samora Machel. Of course, at the time they blamed it on the Portuguese secret police, but evidence came out pretty soon how Eduardo Mondlane had been assassinated by his underling, old Samora Machel. And Samora Machel rose to the top. This is the Tanzanian Standard. Mondlane assassinated, bomb blast at the beach house. In the same way, although South African Communist Party leader Chris Hani, his assassination of 10th of April 1993, was blamed on Polish citizen Janusz Wolish, who might have been involved, but then again, he could have been a KGB agent. He could have been placed there by the Soviets. I mean, he's brought up in Poland. Anything's possible. A South African Conservative Party leader and very eloquent, the most eloquent English-speaking Conservative in the country at the time, Clive Darby Lewis, was blamed. Even though he didn't do it, he is in prison till the end of his life. And this is how they reported the murder of, or assassination. I don't know if you can call it a murder. When we're in a war, people are being murdered. This is at the same year that the St. James Massacre took place and so on. And this man is in charge of not only the General Secretary of the Southern Communist Party, but he's also the head of Umkhonto-we-Sizwe, the terrorist wing. So they blamed Wallace. They put, this is an interesting way of doing the picture, and from below and so on and so forth, probably surprised him and put the South African flag behind him, even though he's a Polish citizen. Well, nevertheless, he fitted their bill of a typical South African racist, even if he wasn't South African. And Clive Darby Lewis, whose 9mm was used in the assassination, was blamed. But it's highly unlikely Clive Darby Lewis even knew about this ahead of time. ANC leaders Bantu Holomisa, who once was the dictator of Transkei, and Winnie Mandela, who, as you know, was Nelson Mandela's favorite second wife, both claimed it was actually an inside job in order to remove the obvious favorite for deputy president of the ANC under Mandela and make way for Thabo Mbeki and Jacob Zuma. And so, in fact, to her dying days, Winnie Mandela maintained, this is an inside job, Mandela knew about it, Thabo Mbeki and Zuma were behind it, and the ANC pulled all their security agents off for the day. The only day he was without his bodyguards is the day he got assassinated, and who could have pulled his security off except the highest up in the ANC? Actually, it was Thabo Mbeki's position overseeing these people. So they might have continued to say you must promote Chris Hani for voting ANC, but the ANC assassinated him. It's just, this is the way all communists are. They are cannibalistic. The communist revolution of Red China in 1949 was followed by the Great Leap Forward in 1948 and by a second phase of the revolution from 1966 to 1976. The second phase of the revolution, or the Cultural Revolution in China, included massive seizures of property, widespread land reform, they called it, confiscation without compensation, public humiliation ceremonies of religious and cultural leaders, old people in other words, arbitrary imprisonment, torture, hard labor, and mass executions. And who did they use? The youngsters who had never known life in nationalist China, and therefore they could be brainwashed and propagandized because they're the born frees. And the way they treat now, Confucian and Buddhist society was highly respectful of elders and tradition. The communists destroy that. They want you to despise the older people and to despise the elders. And so they would take them with humiliating signs, shave off their head, treat them like criminals, and have them stand here where they were forced to publicly confess all sorts of things. Just look at the kind of ridiculous hats they're forced to wear, and they've got to bow, and the people just, these young people, these red gods, these, what do you call these people? Pouring out the hatred on the old people, the school teacher, the principal, maybe the person was a mayor or town council at one time or whatever it was, but they represent the bourgeois. They represent the old guard. They represent the people who are not born free. Now, all of these people were murdered, but not just murdered. They first had to be humiliated and they had to be tortured. And, of course, ultimately, this is what communist liberation means, a bullet in the back. or several bullets in the back, as the case may be. This is the Cultural Revolution. In the Guinness Book of Records, it's listed as the greatest massacre in the history of the world. 69 million people, according to Guinness Book of Records. In fact, Death by Government says that it was easily that amount. I think they put 67 million. Died in the second phase of the revolution in China. The Cultural Revolution in China even included purging the party of any deemed disloyal. And this included the president. Now, he's the chairman of the party. This is the president of Red China. But President Liu Shaoqi, he's purged. And the general in charge of the army, Lu Ruqing, he's also disloyal. I mean, how's that possible? The top people of the whole of the Red Army faction happened to be disloyal. And by the way, later Mao Zedong himself was accused of being disloyal by those who followed him. But this is the Cultural Revolution. They all end up murdering one another. Mao Zedong mobilized his Red Guards to sweep into every farm, every village in a vast country of China to purge reactionaries, counter-revolutionaries, and all others not deemed sufficiently enthusiastic for the revolution. And in fact, this is the term you hear time and again. Reactionary, counter-revolutionary. And they called this ultimately the Great Leap Forward, which is probably where you get the term a nip in the air from. The Cultural Revolution. This is the propaganda. And this is the way they depicted it. It looks heroic, positive, forward-looking. And these are actually the kind of propagandas they produced and tried to inspire the people to overachieve goals and impressive construction projects and all sorts of things, but the people starved to death while they're doing this. But nice-looking propaganda. I mean, happy-looking people. Lots of productivity, lots of factories, and notice the dragon's even happy to support them and so on. And yes, I mean, you understand why they had to use artwork here. Pretty hard to get a photograph of something that never happened. This was the result, and the result was the destruction of thousands of years of culture and crippling the country economically. It impoverished China intellectually and culturally. Look at the Chinese poster. What's he smashing? It looks like tape recorders, statues, not compact discs, LPs, books, and so on. So they're destroying actually technology and knowledge and history and religious symbols. So this is the English translation, that's the Chinese translation, but you can see clearer what they're destroying there. Mao was able to mobilize the young Red Guards for this destructive campaign because they'd never known life in nationalist China, and they'd been effectively indoctrinated in the state schools with Marxist propaganda and Mao's little red book. This was key. And this is what Red China has been. A bullet in the head. And this is one person's testimony of what it was like being one of the Red Guards. See the red scarf? Part of the Youth League, and therefore part of destroying culture and respect for the ancestors. Cuba also had a second phase of the revolution, where Fidel Castro openly admitted his communist roots and ambitions, which included nationalization of all industries and all agriculture. The courts of law were replaced with people's tribunals, and the creation of what he called a workers' state. When Patrice Lumumba violated the constitution and the laws of the Congo with nationalizations, the result was carnage, civil war, and total economic collapse. Nationalization of industries and farms in Zambia and Tanzania brought economic collapse to these countries as well. However, vast amounts of Western foreign aid kept these countries, or at least the communist governments, somewhat afloat, although the vast majority of the aid was, of course, stolen by corruption by the governments themselves. When Mozambique was granted independence by Portugal in 1975, Samora Machel confiscated all private property, completely destroyed what was once a vibrant economy. The Grand Hotel in Beira, not so grand after liberation. Before independence, Mozambique exported food. After Frelimo's revolution, more than 1 million Mozambicans died of starvation, and the country was torn apart by a vicious civil war. And yes, that's what can happen in a subtropical country under socialism. At independence of Zimbabwe in 1980, Mozambique's Samora Machel and Tanzania's Julius Nyerere actually warned Robert Mugabe, do not make the same mistakes we've done. They urged him, respect private property rights and let the Europeans continue to contribute to the economy. In other words, don't kill the goose that lays the golden egg. In Zimbabwe, the second phase of the revolution was launched approximately 20 years after signing of the Lancaster House Agreement, which led to the transfer of power under guarantees of private ownership property, the rule of law, separation of powers, and legal safeguards. United States of America and Great Britain guaranteed that they would ensure that all private ownership property, especially farms, would be respected and the rule of law and so on and so forth. Don't know what they've been doing lately. Despite massive foreign aid from Great Britain, America, and the EU, Mugabe's ZANU government failed to provide the vast amount of land at their own disposal to be productively farmed. And in order to distract their citizens from the gross failure of the government, they blamed the economic woes of the country on the white farmers and unleashed a wave of violent farm invasions, which led to the total collapse of Zimbabwean economy, the worst hyperinflation ever seen in history. It can go from, how many zeros are these? I mean, whoa, $100 trillion. And $100 trillion was after they deleted 16 zeros from the currency. And it couldn't even buy half a loaf of bread. One brick in 2008 cost more than every home, business, farm, and property in all of Zimbabwe in 1980. How's that for destroying people's pensions, savings? You could be a starving billionaire in Zimbabwe. I mean, even the poorest person's a billionaire, at least by 2008 they were. The national suicide of Zimbabwe under Mugabe, under his dictatorship, led to more than half of the total population fleeing Zimbabwe. Unemployment rocketed to over 90%. And that's of the half of the population left behind. I mean, imagine if they'd all stayed. Even worse unemployment. Land reform in Zimbabwe was nothing of the sort. It was just looting of the farms and then going back to the squalor where they came from. And these farms that used to provide most of the hard currency, most of the exports, of course, all the food of the country, reduced to a point where selling rats or mice in Zimbabwe becomes a feasible occupation because that's some of the main nutrition some people get. And this is where it goes everywhere in Africa. Wherever you've had socialism, whether you're talking about Ethiopia, Eritrea, wherever it is, this is the result of land reform. Land reforms by governments, socialist governments, end up with the very people they claim to be doing this for starve. And do you think they care? Nope. And the United Nations doesn't care either, because this is what justifies their worthless existence, as they send hundreds of millions of dollars of aid and hundreds of millions of tons of whatever to be abused, lost, who knows what, but it keeps them going. And at the bottom of it, okay, you've got some people who feel they're doing some good to helping these people, but nobody starved in the old Rhodesia. Nobody starved in the old colonial Africa. This is a result of the decolonialization program under the Cold War, which now props up mass murdering dictators, corrupt communists who exploit the population, and they stay in power with foreign aid. And the people on the ground in whose name all this has been done are the ones who suffer, and they live in squalor and pollution and absolute chaos. So now, the ANC strategy for a second transition in South Africa. In 2012, the National Policy Conference of the African National Congress adopted a policy document called the Second Transition, Building a National Democratic Society and the Balance of Forces. Okay, tedious document to wade through, but this watershed document in preparation for the 53rd African National Congress National Conference in 2012 was saturated with talk of revolution, transformation, which is another word for change or revolution, transforming the economy, another word for revolution, ideological work, and the battle of ideas. What ideas are they having a battle for? Social transformation, another euphemism for revolution, mass mobilization organization, another word for intimidation and terrorism. The document speaks of armed struggle, activism of a revolutionary end, disciplined cadreship, the eradication of the legacy of colonialism and apartheid, and the liberation of the country for national and all other forms of discrimination, presumably including gender and gay GB agenda and all the rest of it. The democratic consolidation of the creation of a country, the transformation of gender relationships with men and women making a contribution to society as equals, the revolutionary transformation of South African society by a revolutionary people's movement, an agent for progressive change. The word revolution appears, I'm guessing, over 100 times in this 40-something page document. Interestingly, 1 year later, 26 July 2013, the Economic Freedom Fighters, the EFF, or the Everything for Free Party, was launched by the one-time president of the ANC National Youth League, Julius Malema. Now, is this a genuine opposition to an alternative to the ANC, or is this just the vanguard of the revolution? Generally considered as a radical breakaway from and an opposition to the ANC, there are many who regard the EFF as a deception operation, intricately coordinated with the ANC for bringing about the second phase of the revolution. I certainly believe that. The EFF is described by themselves as communist, Marxist-Leninist, anti-capitalist, pan-Africanist, and black supremacist. Notice what they did last year. October 2017, they were celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Great October Socialist Revolution. What's the Great October Socialist Revolution? The Bolshevik Revolution, that's what. The Great October Socialist Revolution? You've got to be kidding. Well, just in case you missed it there, they've got a picture of Lenin there. Gee, isn't he a white man? I thought they hated all whites. Anyway, there we go. There's Vladimir Lenin on their poster. Wow. So, is this the second phase of the revolution? Notice how all over the world you get these characters following the Marx brothers. And, yep, what a bunch. Look at this blasphemous type of artwork they come out with. You know what this is modeled on? It's this famous Last Supper scene of the Lord at the table with his 12 disciples. And so here they've got old Marx with his disciples Lenin, and there's Stalin, and there's Mao Zedong, and there's Fidel Castro. Oh, there's Che Guevara. Yeah. Where's Trotsky? Well, he got axed, I suppose. Ho Chi Minh. I don't know if you can recognize some of these other characters, but it's kind of a who's who of the communist world. I'm sure Paul Mugabe's really disappointed he's not on this. The honeymoon is over for the white people in South Africa. Did you know there was a honeymoon for white people in South Africa? Yep, apparently this is how you fight racism. And just this year, until 31st of May, there's been farmers murdered every 5.4 days. 202 farm attacks, and these are the records of it. They've got a memorial in Transvaal, cross copy. But don't think it's just whites they're killing. Oh, these people kill more black victims than they kill white victims. Bad as it is for the white farmers, the black inhabitants of the townships get it worse, and they get it more often. This is what was happening on the roads while we were traveling around then. We were getting warnings, watch out for the N2 and N3 and whatever. You know, throwing furniture and so on down from bridges, blocking cars, causing trouble, burning tires and roads, and burning police vehicles, burning buses, burning pentechnicons. All this is a guaranteed way of improving the economy. Yet when EFF's Malema proposed in Parliament to bring the process of amending the country's constitution to allow for the confiscation of white-owned land without compensation, the motion was passed by an overwhelming 241 votes for to 83 against. Every single ANC member of Parliament, every single EFF member of Parliament voted unitedly to support the motion. If the EFF was a genuine opposition to, if it was a genuine competition to the ANC, every member of Parliament of the ANC would have refused to vote for any measure proposed by the EFF, even if they agreed with it. They would have proposed their own measure. I mean, on principle, would you support a traitor's bill of someone who's been a traitor, who's betrayed you? If the ANC really hated Malema for what he'd done, they could have put him in prison for all the corruption he's involved in, which they all know about and all the rest of it. He's done, I mean, his incitement to violence. If they were serious, they want to get rid of him, it would be easy. I mean, they could mobilised the police to shoot EFF people who destroying property, including police vehicles. They claim that Julius Malema is a traitor who defected from them, but they vote for his bill. Is Julius Malema a genuine opposition to ANC? Is Julius Malema's EFF a genuine opposition to ANC? The National Assembly of Southern Province sent shockwaves around the country and the world when they accepted a motion to change the constitution so as to allow expropriation of land without compensation. But this is what they've been aiming for since 2012, and the EFF was launched in 2013. The EFF is a plausible deniability to be the vanguard of the revolution, for the ANC to portray themselves as, look, you know, I mean, we're reasonable. We're not as radical as the EFF. They can go and do all the terrible things, which if things turn against them, they can always say, well, they're not part of us, just like what Stalin did to Trotsky. You could axe them if it becomes too, if there's too much baggage. The threat to private ownership property and the clearly stated intention to remove constitutional safeguards and protections of private ownership of property has staggered observers.
Sorry, Peter, I just want to know the BLF, where do they fit into this?
Same sort of thing. I don't know the details about them, but from their radicalism, they've said they've already declared war and they're going to come for all the white land and so on. Well, BLF and the EFF and the ANC, and to be honest, the DA, I don't see much difference between any of them. I think they're all part of the same game plan. And you can see it. This is the National Democratic Revolutionary Alliance. COSATU, the Southern Communist Party, and ANC, they are in alliance. Most of the top cabinet members of the ANC are actually Southern Communist Party members. It's a scam. Just look at this. ANC, Southern Communist Party. I mean, who's the senior and who's the junior partner here? The ZANU-fication or renewal with the ANC. Does the ANC live? Is the ANC leading? And who's here? Southern Communist Party. COSATU. EFF? What? They're on the same platform? At the Mandla Forum? These guys all sit on the same platform together. They work together. And the Southern Communist Party, notice Che Guevara. They really like Che Guevara. Dirty, unwashed, mass-murdering thug who murdered over 7,000 people by his own estimation, including women and children. Southern Communist Party, I don't know if it's hard, it's, what's the colour of the EFF? Red. What's the colour of Southern Communist Party? Same red. The Southern Communist Party controls the ANC. Southern Communist Party controls the EFF. Do you know what gaslighting is? Gaslighting comes from an Ingrid Bergman film where an abusive man makes his wife feel that she is to blame for everything, that she's losing her mind by continually playing games with him. So gaslighting is a form of psychological abuse used by narcissists in order to instill in their victims an extreme sense of anxiety and confusion to the point where they no longer trust their own memory, their own perception, or their own judgment. You know, it's like, doesn't matter how much rain is falling, don't be a drought denier. When worst drought in 127 years... But it's been getting colder ever since we've been having global warming. We're in global warming. It doesn't matter what it is, you know. Government's not violent. Government's not Marxist, whatever. You just got to don't trust your own memory or your own perceptions. The techniques used in gaslighting is similar to that used in brainwashing, interrogation, and torture. It's been used in psychological warfare for decades. This is PSYOPs, psychological warfare. You bombard people, you confuse people, you sleep deprive them, you mess them around until they don't even trust what they think or see anymore. Okay, most important, what can be done to resist the second phase of the revolution? What does the future hold and what can be done to resist and derail this planned second phase of the revolution? Because I've got no doubt that's what they plan. Well, first of all, we need to be informed. My people are destroyed from lack of knowledge. The ANC's policy document of 2012 itself refers to the ideological struggle and the battle of ideas. Now, they understand it. Our communist enemies understand we're in a battle of ideas, an ideological struggle. The average Christian doesn't. I mean, the average Christian and the average church and average seminary and university is acting like, oh, but the education you get from the government is neutral, and the information and news and disinformation you get from the media is neutral. No, it's not neutral. There's nothing neutral in this whole world. Every word, every thought has clear implications. Nothing is without significance. Everything has consequences. You cannot subject your children to 12 years of government indoctrination in their state gulags and not expect it to affect things. You can't subject yourself to SATV and the Bolshevik Broadcasting Corporation, the Clinton News Network and Sly Magazine and the Sunday Crimes and expect it not to mess with your mind and disinform you. You can't watch Hollywood so-called entertainment from cocaine-sniffing, antichrist, blaspheming pagans without it affecting your whole way of thinking. So if we don't recognize we're in a battle of ideas and the entertainment industry, the news media, the school textbooks, all of this have a perspective, the best thing we can do to reclaim our minds is to switch off and unplug the stupid goggle box of satanic altar television and to put a bookcase where the TV used to be and take it out the shooting range and blow it to hell. Because what they're doing is they're destroying our peace, they're destroying our joy, they're stealing our faith, they're undermining our children, they're perverting, distorting, defiling everything they can. And it's intentional, it's not accidental. We're in a battle of ideas. We need to resist the indoctrination and disinformation campaign in the state schools, state gulags, the state textbooks, which lie. It's wartime propaganda. The state-controlled media, which is thoroughly anti-Christian. We marched to SATV and delivered them a yellow card many years ago for the blasphemy. Somebody monitored 280 blasphemies in 1 week on SATV. I'm sure it's worse now. I mean, that was many years ago. They're maliciously stirring up race hatred. They're laying foundations for genocide against whites in South Africa. I mean, this is actually a basically true picture. We are having, is it possible that the people who want to reduce the world's population, like Bill Gates wants to reduce the world's population to a billion, preferably 100 million, and he's the biggest promoter of vaccinations, do you really think the vaccination there to improve your health and to extend your life expectancy, when the people in the UN who want to reduce the population drastically and are promoting genocide, if they're promoting all these vaccinations, do you think it's for your health? Do you think the pharmaceutical companies, which are actually making probably more money than even the munitions manufacturers, do you really think that their goal is to improve your health and your life expectancy? Are we healthier now than people were 100 years ago? And you can just keep asking. And there's so many things. I just love this Ritalin business. You've got these schools like across the road, drug-free school. Line up here for your Ritalin. Do they not see this is preparing people to be drug addicts for life? You can't line people up for their drugs every day and then say there's a drug-free school. It's insane. There's so many insane things. Just look at Sly Magazine. When Obama Nation was running America, you have all these hero worship covers. When Donald Trump is on, I mean, you have all these kind of character assassination covers. Is this news or is this views? And you don't have to like Donald Trump or not to recognize there's a blatant agenda here. You know, they act like PR agents for Obama and they act like character assassination agents when it comes to Trump. I liked what Donald Trump did at one of his public meetings. He said, I'd like to welcome the public relations media campaign for Hillary Clinton, any names, CNN, CBS, NBC, ABC, New York Times, which is true. They were her entire media campaign. And, I mean, it's true. We need to support responsible, balanced, independent sources of news, including independent community radio stations, newsletters and magazines, and reliable websites. We're trying with our From the Frontline podcast. There are many good ones like that. I'd recommend anyone who wants to understand how revolutions work needs to obtain Otto Scott's landmark book, Robespierre, Inside the French Revolution. I read this in something like 6 days. And I laughed my way through it because I recognized when you understand Robespierre, you understand Lenin, Mugabe, all of them, the whole bunch. You understand the Chris Harneys, the Mugabes, the Mandelas, all of them. Castro, this is the prototype revolutionary. What Voltaire was the French Revolution, Karl Marx is to all the other revolutions. What Robespierre was to the French Revolution, that's what Lenin was to the Soviet Revolution. That's what Mugabe was to the revolution in Zimbabwe. That's what Mengistu was to the Ethiopian Revolution, Pol Pot to Cambodia, and so on. This classic by Otto Scott, one of the very best history books. In fact, I think Otto Scott's one of the best historians I've ever come across. His book, Christian Revolution, is just the most spectacular history of the English Civil War and the Reformation, so on too. But Robespierre, Inside the French Revolution. The Agenda 2 DVD documentary, absolutely essential to understand what's going on in all areas, from education, entertainment, news media, the whole lot. Masters of Deceit. Notice the communist clenched fist and a Soviet red. This is what you're dealing with. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's a published agenda. And view the dramatic film, Bitter Harvest on Holodomor in Ukraine. If you want a feel for communism and land reform, this is it. Also read our Farms Freedom Under Fire in South Africa, Nine Stages of Genocide in South Africa and Fearless Farmers Who Write Back, written by Emma, in our latest Christian Action magazine, On the Table. And we've got three articles in this. This is a serious edition. False Flags and Subversion Campaigns, Nine Stages, and Farmers Who Fight Back. All of these are on our Henry Morton Stanley School of Christian Journalism.org website, or HMS School of Christian Journalism website. We need to mobilize prayer and we need to mobilize action. Prayer is an integral, essential foundation for action. We need to establish prayer groups, prayer chains, and prayer networks. The march, the campaign, October last year was excellent. We need to seek God for revival. We need to work for reformation. We need to work for restoration of spiritual life and apply scriptural principles to all areas of life. South Africa was a great, strong superpower of a country, not only militarily superpower, but agriculturally, in terms of technology, in terms of medical science. We led the world at one time with things like heart transplants, arms corps, phenomenal. Even the Apache attack helicopter, which is America's primary helicopter, designed by arms corps. It's our Roy Falk. Just extraordinary. The Americans couldn't make a better artillery piece howitzer than our G5 155 millimeter howitzers. They were buying them from us because they didn't have anything better than that. We were once the best sports, spiritually, mission wise, and now, but back then, we respected the Lord's Day. We had Bible reading and prayer in school. Chaplains started the day with readings and prayer in our army bases. Our school started with hymn singing and Bible reading. I mean, we were a God-fearing country when we led the world. And since we've abandoned God, this country's gone down. Don't want to slant the dogs, but it's gone really down. Our Power of Prayer handbook is designed to help revive people's prayer life and also praying the Psalms. Pray through the 150 Psalms. We need involvement. We need to enlist qualified help. We need to mobilize our friends, our family, our neighbors to mutual support and resistance to the lawless, reckless, dangerous strategies of the Marxist revolutionaries that are threatening us. We have friends outside who are making a stand for us. We need to get armed. We need to get trained. We need to get prepared to defend our family, friends, and neighbors. And some are doing that. There's some good groups out there with some practical training. I will defend the weak. I will defend freedom. I will sacrifice so others may live free. I will defend my family to the death. I love peace, but I'm a fierce enemy. I live by a special code. I live with honor. I was born to be the warrior. And we've got many, tens of thousands of people in South Africa for whom that is a code. And they will see it if they dare to take the next step. Need to obtain the Security and Survival Handbook, which tackles this practically. How prepared are we emotionally, physically, and spiritually for the fight that's coming? Who will rise up for me against the evildoers? Who will make a stand for me against the workers of iniquity? Communism is a catastrophe. It's proved to be the greatest catastrophe in the history of mankind. It is the worst disaster, the greatest killer in history. It is outrageous that in this day and age, anybody could be a Marxist-Leninist. socialism has never achieved a better standard of life for its adherents. Never. Not once. And Karl Marx was a worthless piece of rubbish who never did a day's work in his life. He's a parasite from beginning to end. He let three of his children die of starvation. Two of his daughters committed suicide and his wife committed suicide. What a bundle of laughs he must have been to live with. And they treat Karl Marx like a hero in our universities. I mean, how idiotic can one be? You must read the Heart and Soul of Karl Marx leaflets I've got on the table. There's some lies that lodge so deep in the hopes that man, that they can never be killed, no matter how many are executed to make the lie true. They have executed hundreds of millions of people or starved them to death in the 20th century to try and make the lie of communism true. The high-sounding ideals of the socialists have consistently turned into nightmares which millions of their long-suffering people have used extraordinary ingenuity to endeavor to escape from. Just take the Berlin Wall and the Iron Curtain. Millions have succeeded against all odds in escaping through and across the Iron Curtain, behind the Berlin Wall, or across the shark-infested waters escaping from the workers' paradise in Cuba. The millions of people voting with their feet, fleeing from Marxist oppression and land reform, such as in Zimbabwe, should be a sufficient screaming siren warning to all those who believe that promoting the socialist ideals, they're actually working for a better future. I mean, is it possible that anybody could be that deceived, that stupid, that demonically blinded, that they actually believe Marxist, Leninist, socialist land reform could honestly produce anything but catastrophe and death? While they promise them liberty, they themselves are slaves of corruption. And just in case any of us follow the delusion of so many whiteys in this country that the DA is a hope. I mean, the DANC, there is nothing different between the DA and the ANC at their heart. They are secular humanists. They are pro-abortion. They are pro-pornography. They are pro-gay rights. In fact, the DA actually mock the ANC that the DA's got more homosexuals in their ranks than the ANC does. Oh, gee, they hate Christianity. And yet, Christians in this country have voted for them, financed them, supported them, sacrificed them. People need to see this kind of body language. I mean, the DA and the EFF are in alliance in some parts of this country. So, in fact, that's their great hope, that they can form an alliance to get rid of the ANC so they can become the next exploiters and looters of the country. These people are a bunch of secular humanist criminals. I would not trust them as far as I could throw them. Although a nice Roman catapult could maybe help, throwing them some distance. Communist revolutionaries actually do not care about the masses that they cheerfully use as cannon fodder. The people are used as naive foot soldiers for their revolution. A study of history and the disastrous track record of the second phase revolution should be sufficient to disillusion any cadre. Should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord, therefore the wrath of the Lord is upon you. And by the way, who is this delightful-looking gentleman? Bladen Zamani, General Secretary of the Southern Communist Party. Recently, he was the Minister of Higher Education. While the roads must fall, fees must fall, and everything else tore the university apart. And from his T-shirt, his hat, and the banner behind him, you kind of pick up his ideology. You don't need a gift of discernment for this one. By the way, you know what this is? This was the planned Tower of Babel reconstruction in Moscow over the grave of where Christ the Savior Cathedral, the largest church in Russia and the third largest church in the world at the time, was demolished by order of Joseph Stalin, dynamited in 1931, and they were going to build this monument with Lenin at the top shaking his fist in the face of God. Well, it's an artistic depiction because they never managed to complete it, and this never came about. And as I don't see, like, the plane flying up there too. Oh, all the planes, sorry, there's a whole bunch of them. But this vision of the communists, just like all their visions, didn't come to pass. Today, Christ the Savior Cathedral stands where that used to stand. Communism will fall. Communism always does fall. But we like to give it a bit of a helping hand. Ended a bit earlier. So these are just some of the books that document what we're talking about Death by Government by Professor Rum was absolutely outstanding. We must not just smash Marxism in its political form, but the cultural Marxism, which is being promoted by Hollywood all the time. So, we've got many resources on our ReformationSA.org website. The magazines and newsletters are here. On Facebook, we put a lot of our most radical materials under Reformation 500. And on the Frontline Fellowship Facebook page, we're dealing with these continually. Any questions, any comments?
The question I want to ask is the Cape Secession. What is the...
What's the chance?
What's the chance? And what is the progress that's currently busy?
Yesterday, I was at a businessman's luncheon out in Sunningdale, North Tableview area. And we had a whole lot of businessmen there for the very express purpose of discussing the economic viability of independence for the Western Cape. And I believe it's not only viable, but it's essential. We go down with the ship or we launch out. You know, Titanic's hit an iceberg, it's going down. We either go down with the whole ANC mess or we launch out. I believe decentralization is the only model. It always was. But the Western Cape is paying 4 times more in national taxes than we're getting spent in our area. And that's not assuming that government spending of our taxes is even remotely, vaguely necessary or good, or not waste and corruption. But just statistically, if the Cape went independent, we could halve our taxes and double our services. But actually, I think you could times it by 10. You could bring taxes down to 1%. Honestly, it's absolute scandal. Right now, our government is stealing from us to the tune of 1 trillion rand. 1 trillion rand a year. Every year. It's according to the African Union in terms of the corruption. 25% of the GDP of Africa is being stolen every year by its governments, according to the African Union, a study on corruption. That's not counting other crime. So I think it's not just viable, it's almost essential that the Cape goes independent. This country is going to fall apart. And if they go ahead with the land invasions, I can't see how. We either stay in that mess or we pull out and say, so this land invasions could accelerate the process. I would have said last year that Cape independence might be viable in about 10 years' time. Right now, since this land invasion business has come up, I would say we must make it work in the next year or so, because we've got to accelerate everything. Of course, are coming up to an election next year.
So, Cape Party with Youssef, are we going to work together? Is Cape Party going to work together?
In my understanding, Christians in this country have only 4 options to vote for. If you don't want to vote for pro-abortion, pro-homosexual rights, pro-provision, and so on, you can only vote for the ACDP, the Freedom Front, Christian Democratic Party, or the Cape Party. Those are the only 4 options you can see. Now, the Freedom Front's got the longest track record, and they've been consistent, and the Freedom Front has never voted for abortion, pornography, homosexuality, any of those things. They've always been for decentralization and so on. And they've never had anyone cross the floor defect, and so they've got a good track record. ACDP's had some good things on their track record, I should say on their constitution, but practically they've often dropped the ball and they've voted for affirmative action and they've done a bunch of things which I've questioned their sanity on. In the 2014 manifesto, I've challenged Kenneth Mission and their other elected representatives face to face that there's nothing in the 2014 manifesto ACDP that the DA couldn't say. It's just secular humanist, big government, more taxes, rubbish. There's nothing Christian about it. What has happened. The DA is, the ANC, ACDP has lost its path, and it looks like it's falling off the DA in its approach. Although I know they've got good intentions, and they started well, I think they are off the track. The Cape Party's a refreshing move for decentralization. Of course, they are referendums, Swiss canton system. P.W. Botha was promoting that, actually, back in the 80s, the Swiss canton system and decentralization. It's a good principle, idea that got to come. I was not long ago speaking at a parade of Western Cape Armed Force veterans where the subject came up again about Cape exit. And so there's a lot of thought in this. Every time the Western Cape Armed Force veterans meet, we discuss secession and what could come about and what we can do to affect our family, friends and neighbors. So there's businessmen, there's veterans, there's political parties, there's groups thinking about it. As far as I can see, the primary overwhelming support base for Cape Independence comes from the coloureds.
And the person.
Apparently. The coloured people are overwhelmingly fed up with how the government's treating them, and they are sick and tired. And they said, we weren't light enough in the old government, and we're not dark enough in the new government, and they've been messed around, and they really feel fed up. And they can see their people who've been waiting for 30 years for a house suddenly pushed to one side, and it's given to someone who just arrived last month, sort of thing, because government politics. Just they're really furious. So I can see a lot of support coming from the Cape Flats. Huge support. Interestingly, if you take a survey of language, first language, the vast majority in Western Northern Cape are Afrikaans first language. So in an independent Western Cape, Afrikaans would be the first language and English would be the second language. Afrikaans is being persecuted and hounded out of existence all over the country, and even universities like Stellenbosch. So I think Afrikaans speakers have got a good reason to support independence for the Cape.
Yeah.
Very good reason. So I've legally. Now, I've got a kind of minority opinion here amongst the secessionists. I know most of them are talking about a Cape Republic. I'm one of those who advocates that we should be a constitutional monarchy, and we should invite the monarch in charge of Netherlands to be the official head of state of an independent Cape of Good Hope. This would do several things at once. First of all, it would be a nice smack in the face of the British, who betrayed us many a time. I understand this, but a constitutional monarchy isn't an absolute monarchy. It's a figurehead. It would be immediately appealing back to the fact that 1652, it was the Dutch East India Company that established Cape Town. It would remind people of the fact that the British did steal the Cape from the Dutch. And it would also give us immediately a voice speaking for recognition of the Cape. It would be a tremendous boost to the morale of the people in the Netherlands that after all these hundreds of years, there's an official acknowledgement of the wrong done, and that the Netherlands gets some kind of link. Remember, it's not putting oneself under the Netherlands government. It's having a head of state who's a constitutional monarch, just like the Queen is a head of state of Australia.
No, they don't have the poison king. Sorry.
Well, as I said, I've got a minority opinion on this.
But I'm not a majority.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Personally, I don't think there's ever been a Khoisan king, and I think that's a, what do you call it? I call it a pyramid scheme financial scam. Who's ever heard of this Cornelius? Sorry?
Do you believe that's a fabrication?
What?
The Khoisan king.
There's no such thing as a Khoisan king. It's a lot of nonsense. They're the most decentralized people in the history of the world. They never had a king. I mean, it's ridiculous. Yeah, they were down to one little village, which was, I mean, it wasn't a village. It was like one family. I don't think there was a chief beyond the head of the family in this one little village. This idea of a king of all the Khoisan and the Cape is just, it stretches credulity. I don't think anyone who knows history is going to be impressed by that. But the fact that he wants X amount of money to get in on his pyramid scheme, he doesn't have a chance. Because, amongst other things, he's not going about it in a legal way. The only way to win independence for the Cape is to persuade a majority of the people in the Cape, in other words, 3.5 million voters, to vote for secession. For this, you don't need one political party. For example, Switzerland, Netherlands, don't have any majority party. It's all minority parties. They need coalitions. All you need to do is, like Britain with Brexit, every political party was against it. That was in Parliament. Every media in Britain was against Brexit. The government, totally, and so on. And yet, Brexit won. How? It didn't need a majority party support. It just was social media trumped state mass media and mainline media, which became the lamestream media. I think, like the Trump revolution election victory in the States was a victory for social media, because all the media was against him. fact, both parties were against him. He only won on the basis of social media. So again, we believe that the concept, there are people who support Cape Independence who wouldn't agree with us on a lot of things. So Muslims might support Cape Independence. Atheists might support Cape Independence. Pro-lifers. But if it's on a decentralized model, it can work. Because, like in Switzerland, you've got French, German, Italian, Romansk, Catholic, Protestants, how they all live together so peacefully. Decentralization. You've got German Catholics here, German Protestants there, French Catholics. It's totally decentralized. So, for example, under an independent Cape where we were decentralized down to local municipality, the Boer Kop could be totally Islamic. Belleville could be completely Christian, and so on. And they could be smoking weed in Cape Town. I mean, you know, anything's possible. But the point is, if Rondebosch is running Rondebosch and Newlands is running Newlands, it can work. And the best way to assure this is you bring the police down to the municipal level. The police come from the municipality. They're trained in the municipality. They're answerable to the municipality. They're answerable to the homeowners and the ratepayers. That can work. That's the only way it can work. Because no policeman's going to stand by and watch his community burn if it's his community. Now, if he comes from the other side of the country, he may not care.
Some countries have an autonomous region. Would that work as an interim phase for the Cape?
Maybe, but I'd want it's very interim. Yes?
So easy to find out in what state the South Africa is or the rest of the world. You take the fuel price. Okay. When we had, when the oil price was up to $140, $150 a barrel, we were on 8 rand a litre petrol. Okay, now it's at about $60, $70, sometimes $75 a barrel, we are double. So
yeah,
they need the money for their election campaigns and so on, and that's quick cash coming in.
Yeah.
If you pay with credit card or debit card, it's cash. It goes straight to taxes to them, that's why they raise it. From that, and nobody can say, oh, but then you don't have to drive a car. You take a bus, you take a train, you take a taxi, whatever, all the prices go up.
Sure.
That is the quickest way. And it's a worldwide thing that fuel prices go up. It's the simplification of the people for a globalization. The same thing with the money. They want to have one currency, one world religion.
One world government, one world religion, one world economy. Yeah. And my first mission, I filled up the tank for under 5 rand. I made it from Cape Town to Joburg, 32 rand fuel the whole way. I remember going to Zimbabwe and reporting back. In Zimbabwe, the money goes around faster than the litres. And everyone, I mean, that's unbelievable. Well, of course. We've been where for how long? But it's wrong when the money spins around like this while the liters sort of crawl around like that. Mm. It used to be the other way around. And I mean, we should not get used to this. This is wrong. The fact is, our rand today is worthless.
Wait until the new Mandela notes come up. Watch the rand sink again.
Yes, well, maybe it's appropriate to put his face on it. You'll notice Zimbabwe stopped putting Mugabe's face on their money. I think they now have empty. I saw that some of these empty grain silos and things like that.
Just an abstract knowledge, but I mean, they don't even have a currency anymore. So.
No. Yeah, when a government doesn't want to accept their own currency, you know, that's pretty bad. Yes. I mean, just the example of how it can work. I remember going to Malawi and wanting to fly out of the country, and next thing was, no, but you've got to give $20 airport tax. So I hand over some rand. No, it's got to be in dollars. I'm not American. Why would I have dollars? You've got to pay in dollars. Where am I going to get dollars from? Points across the other side of the airport terminal. So I go over there. There's no one there. I'm looking around. Man, after a while, gets out of the back of his cubicle, walks around. Same man comes into the back of this thing. I need to change money in dollars, how much? And, you know, he gives me $20. I walk over to the other side. He finally comes around. I give him the same $20 note. I mean, I wonder how many times the $20 notes move backwards and forwards. But they don't even want their own money. They want some foreign money. It's pretty bad, but yeah, that's governments. Any other comments, questions? So we've got some good ammunition to fight the revolution there. By the way, I dug up some old comics. We were involved with the Open Doors for the Marx, Lenin, Mao, and Christ comics, which basically educates people with what communism is. Now, I've only got that in Afrikaans right now. We just read it over 10,000 just in Namibia, I remember, of those. That was one of our information campaigns back in the 1980s. Anyway, we dug those out doing archaeological excavations here. There's some nice tracts on Che Guevara to give to anyone wearing this ugly mug of this horrible Marxist, and of course the heart and soul of Karl Marx in English and Afrikaans. Liberation theology for people who seem to think that communism is Christianity and who've bought the lie, and communist liberation, which exposes that. So there's a bunch of anti-communist materials there, and of course the latest Christian Action deals with the land invasion nonsense in detail. So, especially, any other comments or questions?
Especially that to give out in Mandela Day.
Yes. So, we are approaching 2-3 very important days for education. 14th of July is Bastille Day. Even Franschhoek celebrates Bastille Day, for goodness sakes. Not one of their relatives came from revolutionary France. They fled 100 years before the revolution. But anyway, for some reason, the people in Franschhoek have Bastille Day, and they ignore Reformation Day, which is pretty pathetic. Important for us to expose what the French Revolution was. So I'm planning to tackle the French Revolution in great detail next week at the Reformation Society. Then, on the 17th of October of July, of course, we've got the 100th anniversary of the murder of the Tsar and his family, the Romanovs, in Russia. I think it's important to remind people of this wickedness, this mentality of these criminals. It's a murderous, in fact, it's the most murderous ideology in history, communism. Then on the 18th, of course, you've got Mandela Day, which is the making of a new religion. And people sometimes ask, what are you doing for Mandela Day? Same thing I do for every Mandela Day. I send out in every social media, electronic form and so on, Mandela Day and the making of a new religion, and idolatry, the most condemned sin in the Bible, and the Mandela industry and so on, because that's what I do for Mandela Day. I fight against idolatry. This is pathetic. To think that they're Christians who fall... In fact, I think there's some Christians who show more enthusiasm for Mandela than they do for Jesus Christ. And some might do more for Mandela Day than they do for fulfilling the Great Commission. It's absolutely hideous. But anyway, good opportunity to educate your friends and family if they have been sucked into the propaganda. I think they're trying to make Mandela Day bigger than Christmas. And it's like in America, they're trying to push Halloween. I think there's some people who are trying to push Halloween to try and make it bigger than Christmas. Decorating, and you go to homes and they've got tombstones in a garden, and they've got ghosts hanging from the trees, and they've got cobwebs, and I mean, it's bizarre. People wearing hats with a hatchet with blood trickling out of its hats, and they dress their kids like this, and then they've got eyeballs and so on, type of sweets, and it's just, what on earth is going on? But it's coming here. I mean, if
it's here.
If they could sell to the Americans, they want to sell it to us too. And so, you know, we've got to resist. And for us, every Halloween day, we're promoting a reformation. We're opposing Halloween. So everything is an opportunity for education. So when people talk about the water crisis, well, we've got a Wonders of Water booklet designed for giving out at water points where people are queuing. Or now I don't know if they're queuing for the water as much as trying to survive the downpours of drought. Or freezing in the global warming. But if we could just get people thinking. But remember, if you question a drought, you'll be called a drought denier, which is a terrible thing. But I'm a drought denier. Yes, I don't believe we've had a drought at all. I think it's the worst water mismanagement in the city's history. It's a total scandal, and they don't want to end. It doesn't matter how much it rains.
Well, the last couple of days, nobody talked about global warming here anymore.
Well, it's good to just get people thinking, because we drove across the whole of the Karoo all the way to the Orange River, and we just saw green, green, green. I mean, the Karoo is green. It's extraordinary. And then you go into the Free State and it's brown. But they're not, they don't have a drought, but we have a drought. So, you know, there's just all this. You've got to ignore what your eyes tell you. You must ignore all the evidence. You've just got to believe it. I flew to Pretoria about a month ago and back, and on the way in, I was looking out the window, just amazed at all these full dams, and everything was green, green, green all over Cape Peninsula's coming in. And as we landed, Sorvar, here the flight attendant, they're not stewardess, more they're flight attendants, said, Cape Town is suffering the worst drought in 127 years. And I look out the window and everything's green as far as you can see. And I mean, it was even drizzling when we arrived, and I'm just thinking that. And then you walk in, there's these massive billboards along the walls in the airport telling you about this drought. No, you can't wash your hands in the airport and so on. It's just, but they love this. This is what politicians live for. Politics. Poly, many, ticks, blood-sucking parasites. Politics, many, blood-sucking parasites.